U.S.
You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the night's second hour, ladies and gentlemen, and for the last 10 years, you have helped us make it big for the issues that motivate our good radio program. And, you know, it's really staggering. We put this up, and I'm going to say this very quickly, and we're going to let Keith take over. He wants to talk about the Keystone Pipeline and why it should be on everyone's mind. But the number of people that the political cesspool has reached with the truth is just amazing. And I'm not just talking about all the media attention that we've continue to get, it seems, each and every month, if not bi-weekly. We're making news somewhere above and beyond our own radio program. Not just the people who listen in on the AM/FM affiliates, not just the people who tune in on the internet or the Roku player or the Listen Live telephone line. All of those are the most common methods by which our show is delivered to the masses. But I was just incredibly encouraged this week to notice that throughout YouTube, fans of this show have taken audio of our program, shows throughout the years, and turned them into videos. And I was just browsing around for a few minutes on YouTube earlier this week, and I noticed that our videos have received well over a million views. A million views on YouTube alone. And I'll just give you a couple of random examples. So we have this, we interviewed Anthony Cumia last year. That has been turned into a video on YouTube that's been viewed over 7,000 times. I found an interview from 2012 that Bill Rowland and I conducted with Brother Nathaniel Kapner. That's been viewed over 9,000 times. There are, it seemed to be dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of similar related TPC videos on YouTube, like this profile on Davy Crockett that Keith Alexander presented back in 2007, which has been viewed 18,000 times. I found an interview that I did with David Duke 23,000 times. One of my clips on CNN received 140,000 views. And there's dozens, if not hundreds, of videos similar. You add them all up, you're well over a million. And folks, let me just tell you something. We have reached a million people by this auxiliary method of delivery. This is not even one of our five most common ways that the show is heard. A million listeners or a million people have reached or have received our truthful message via YouTube thanks to the people who, like a grassroots army, are just going out there and posting these things. It's incredible, folks. It's incredible. And we don't know. We don't know which one of those people, maybe one of those YouTube viewers, could be the next Leonidas of our people, and that's why it is so worth keeping this show on the air. And time's running out to respond to our first quarter fundraising appeal, but if you want to be part of the reason that we reach the next million listeners on the Political Cesspool, donate tonight, and you're going to get a great gift if you donate $100 or more. A million views on YouTube, Keith, at least.
Well, look, we're producing a product that people want. I don't know why advertisers aren't flocking to our standard. We ought to have more sponsors than we can shake a stick at. Because if you want to get the word out on the cheap, there's no better way to do it than by sponsoring the Political Cesspool.
And we know Matt the Copperhead's calling in the next segment, and we're going to get to him. He's going to be calling in from Starbucks. But first, let's start with the Keystone Pipeline. We'll let you set the table, tease it a little bit, and we can follow it up next week, too.
Okay, well, the Keystone Pipeline has been in the news lately, and I think it deserves the patented political cesspool treatment. We need to break this down. Just in way of background, the Keystone Pipeline is a proposed pipeline from the oil-producing areas in western Canada through North Dakota down to the American Gulf to the refinery centers that they have at places like Texas City and Beaumont. They want to get that crude oil down here so it can be refined. And then they want to export most of it. This is the key to understanding the Keystone Pipeline situation. The Republicans in Congress passed approval for the construction of the Keystone Pipeline. President Obama has vetoed that. Now, the problem is both the Republicans and the Democratic president actions were motivated by the wrong reasons. Well, what is the right reason and what is the right approach to the Keystone Pipeline project? That's what we're going to go into. There's a little-known law that exists that has existed since the 1973 Arab oil embargo that prohibits the export of crude oil from the United States to foreign nations. And that, quite frankly, is a very good law and one that needs to be kept in place. Unfortunately, there's an industry group of American petroleum producers that want to end that law, that want to override that law. It's a group called PACE, which is called Producers for American Crude Oil Exports, or PACE. Let me read you an article from the Memphis Commercial Appeal on Saturday, March 14, 2015. That was last weekend, 7 days ago to the day. It says, Producers Call for End to Crude Export Ban, by Don Capecchi and Bradley Dyson. Washington. About a dozen U.S. drilling executives were in Washington this week trying to persuade White House officials and lawmakers to lift the 40-year ban on U.S. oil exports, according to two people familiar with the meetings. Chief executives from the lobbying group Producers for American Crude Oil Exports, or PACE, met with White House Senior Energy Policy Advisor Brian Deese, seeking a rollback of the U.S. oil export ban imposed after the 1973 Arab oil embargo, according to two people who asked not to be identified because the discussions weren't public. Well, so much for the Sunshine Law, I guess, right? Producers are eager to lift the ban because oil in the U.S. is selling for about $10 less than the global benchmark. I guess that means $10 a barrel. Less than the world price. The meeting preceded a report Friday by the International Energy Agency that record U.S. crude supplies soon made test limits of the nation's storage capacity, further threatening prices. We've had a series of very productive meetings with senators from both parties and the administration, and look forward to continuing those conversations in the months ahead, said Gordon Baker, PACE's executive director, in a statement that didn't outline what the talks included. We'll be back with more on this after these words from our sponsor.
And Matt the Copperhead in the next segment from Starbucks and Mark Weber. Where are we going to find the time? Watch us make magic happen.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0° sleeping bag. This comfortable family-sized sleeping bag can hold two adults and one child, or four young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Extra Large cot, a camping cot with a
steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
With autumn in the air, it's time to think about getting ready for winter. And it's time to save at HerbalHealer.com. You'll find amazing seasonal savings to prepare you for the fight against cold and flu season. Like Oregacillin to promote lung health. 30 capsules, regularly $34.95, now only $25. HHA Olive Leaf, the natural antiviral, normally $16.95, now 60 capsules are just $12. HHA Elderberry Power, a great flu and virus fighter, regularly $16.95, 60 capsules, now $10. Save on all our homeopathic detoxes. Choose from lungs, kidney, liver, brain, libido, or whole body, normally $26.95, now just $20. Visit HerbalHealer.com and click on the Fall Winter Specials button to save on all our natural cold and flu fighting products. Also explore our Herbal Healer Academy correspondence courses that teach you how to handle your health naturally. HerbalHealer.com, healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
Searching, searching.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
All right, Keith, Keystone Pipeline, why are we talking about it? Go.
We're talking about the Keystone Pipeline because it's important. The basic goal of all American energy policy should be for America, the United States of America, our nation, to become energy self-sufficient so that we're no longer under pressure or coercion from any foreign supplier. We learned in 1973 with the Arab oil embargo how vulnerable we were to the traditional program of using up everyone else's resources first. Now, heaven be praised, we have found new resources that we didn't even know we had that are available through the fracking process. Unfortunately for fracking, to get all of that online, you have to have a world price of over $50, or at least in America, over $50 a barrel. You know, with $50 a barrel, we could have $2 a gallon gas ad infinitum. That's what we ought to be doing. We don't want the Keystone Pipeline built if what's going to happen is that we're just going to run that stuff through our refinery and send it overseas to be sold. We're already doing that with all the oil from the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve. Everything that comes out of Alaska right now is going to the Far East. Why? Because the people on the left coast won't let it be outloaded or downloaded in the West Coast. In fact, they also have abundant oil reserves offshore off the Pacific coast of the Western United States, California, Oregon, Washington State, but they can't access that because all of those states run by leftist administrations have refused to let it be drilled ever since the 1973 Santa Barbara oil spill. Now, the rest of the nation needs to insist that they get in line with national policy just the way that the rest of the nation insisted the South get in line with national policy on race, for example, during the Civil Rights Movement. and rejoin the union and start producing that oil. And we need to make sure that this we expand refinery capacity in the United States and let Americans get the benefit of American oil. The way that the Keystone Pipeline project is set up now, Americans won't benefit from it except for the few that are at the top of the big oil companies. And basically, Saudi Arabia is right now pumping in low-cost oil to prevent us from getting our fracking reserves online for the benefit of Americans. We need to have an American-first energy policy, and we need to call out the people in Pace and all of these other business types that don't care about Americans and getting good resources for Americans at good prices, but instead just want to line their pockets. This is an American national treasure, our petroleum reserves, and we need to use them, and we need to use them for the benefit of the American people.
Very good, Keith. Keith has been waiting for 3 weeks to talk about the Keystone Pipeline, and we can revisit that at greater length next week, because I know it's a topic near and dear to Keith's heart. In fact, we would talk about it more right now, but we cannot keep the Copperhead waiting anymore.
He's coiled and ready to strike.
He's coiled and ready to strike at Starbucks. Are you still at Starbucks, Copperhead?
Hey, guys, what's going on? Thomas Atatsu, happy St. Patrick's week. Happy birthday to...
Are you still celebrating that, Matt? I know you're from New York.
That's right, but more importantly, I'm celebrating the birthday of General Patrick Claiborne, the great Confederate born in
yes,
County.
That's right.
Buried, I'm in Jonesboro, Arkansas right now, and he's buried, probably...
That's Claiborne County, isn't it?
I'm not sure if that is Claiborne County that I'm in now, but I know in Helena, Arkansas is where the good general is buried.
Helena. Helena. We're gonna acclimate you to the South. Not Helena, but Helena.
Right. Way over to his graveside one day. Pass some good whiskey over. He was a good man.
Absolutely. We'll do that together.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that the staff of the cesspool will go with you to share a drink of whiskey with Patrick Claiborne. Eddie, we're going to give the general a drink at his grave.
Amen. And Eddie always has plenty of libation for that purpose.
All right, but let's go.
He's stocked with it.
Absolutely, especially here in the hills. There's no shortage of this stuff.
All right, Copperhead, tell us about your adventure at Starbucks. We've been waiting for this.
Okay, I had to jump back in the truck, I had to fill it up with diesel, and I had to get out of there because there was a bunch of teeny boppers screaming. I couldn't even hear myself think and plug up the phone and get a good charge on it, call you guys. I went in, stopped in Jonesboro. They have two Starbucks. I went to one of them, and I had to make a pit stop, as they say, and use the facilities. I asked for a cup of hot water for my Barry's Irish Tea. And I got in a little bit of a conversation with the two nice white girls that were working the counter there, working hard. Didn't really get into the hashtag stuff in my cup, thank God. But, I left them and to give to the manager a copy of not only racism, schmacism, the true literature on if you're going to have an honest debate and discussion, dialogue of race. There's none other than racism, schmacism.
Oh, my goodness. How about that,
That's the Bible of race relations.
We got five copies right here in the studio.
Every Starbucks I pass, I'm going to get a copy to. And we're going to take this up to what's his name? Up in Seattle.
Howard Schmuck. Yeah, that's a good Yiddish word for
him. And we're going to push to get a copy in every Starbucks. Why not? He wants a dialogue.
In fact, sell it. They need to sell that up at the cash register, you know.
You bet.
Well, that's what we need to do. Instead of that insert that USA Today gave all the Starbucks to distribute, we need copies of racism, schmacism there if they really want to understand what you can and can't say.
Now, Jonesboro must be a majority white area if it has two Starbucks, for heaven's sake, right?
Kansas, I mean, here, yes, and of this county, you know, I'm in the Delta now in the Arkansas, so, it gets pretty...
Well, in the Delta, you'll start to encounter black people, but in Jonesboro, in the hills, I'm afraid you're going to see only those dreaded white people.
Yeah, especially if you keep heading northwest from Jonesboro. It's
Yeah, as soon as I get into West Memphis, I know I'm not in Kansas anymore. I'm not in the hills anymore. But that's got to be our campaign. Every Starbucks, a copy of Racism, Snatchism, and
I'll tell you what. We're going to ask Eddie right now. Eddie,
a chicken in every pot and a racism, spacism in every Starbucks.
Hey, Eddie, what's up, bro?
Well, I need to be streaming it.
Well, Eddie doesn't have his headset on yet. Keith's got the second set that we have here at the studio. But Eddie,
right.
Copperhead wants to know.
The copy of racism, snitches every black people at Starbucks. And they got to roll these prices back to 1964. We're talking 80 cents.
Yeah, no kidding.
A cup of coffee here. Come on.
Yeah, $7 for a cup of coffee.
Go to the local one.
Hey, Eddie, Matt the Copperhead.
I got to stop in the Chick-fil-A and get myself a coffee. Hang on.
All right, buddy. Hey, listen, thank you for doing that. I tell you what, that's the stunt we need to recreate for our YouTube channel, which has thousands of views itself, and we're talking about all the views. Eddie, we want ladies and gentlemen, breaking news. Starbucks has just merged with Chuck E. Cheese. Hey, Eddie. Sam hey, Copperhead, I think you're breaking up there in Arkansas. We're losing you just a little bit, but Copperhead wanted to say hello to you, Eddie. He wants to know if we can get you on camera delivering a racism smacism, a copy of the book to the local Starbucks manager as you engage him in a conversation.
About race, of course.
I would love to do that.
A fearless conversation.
I would love to do that, but I'm really timid and all. So, but maybe I could get enough nerve to do that. But my strategy was, we were talking about this Copperhead. I was going to tell the manager there's no such thing as race, and I think he's a flaming racist for even bringing the situation up. He's a racist.
That's right.
Bring up a great point. Great point by Eddie. Yeah. Yeah. They all tell us that race is a social construct and race doesn't exist. So how can we even have a conversation about something?
I think he's a racist for even bringing the point up. Only a racist would bring that point up.
In here.
It proves that Starbucks is racist to bring that up.
That's right, because race doesn't exist, right?
That's right. Well, according to Ashley Montague, he wrote a book, Race, Mankind's Most Dangerous Myth. I mean, and he's the patron saint of all liberals on the issue.
I will never patronize.
We've got to take a break, everybody.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the political cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQonline.com and click on subscribe now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQonline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you sick and tired of just being sick and tired? Are you sick and tired of being told that you were somehow privileged? Are you sick and tired of being told to shut up, both at work and at school? Are you sick and tired of panhandlers pestering you whenever you go out to shop or to eat? Are you sick and tired of jobs that never come and an economy that never goes anywhere? Are you sick and tired of having to take orders from incompetence? Are you sick and tired of movies and television shows that depict a white man as a bumbling incompetent? Are you sick and tired of a government that welcomes non-white immigrants and exposes you to diseases? If you are sick and tired of being sick and tired, then the American Freedom Party is for you. Connect with us, theamericanfreedomparty.us. Once again, theamericanfreedomparty.us.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Our main is, well, one of the main events, but certainly our featured guest for the evening is the one and only Mark Weber. Always an event when Mark Weber is with us. He is, of course, the director for the Institute of Historical Review. In addition to being a lecturer, historian, current affairs analyst, and author, born and raised in Portland, Oregon, Mark was educated in the United States and Europe, holding a master's degree in modern European history from Indiana University. Now, normally when Mark is on, we're with him to talk about something either historical in nature or perhaps something pertaining to foreign policy, but tonight he returns to the political cesspool to examine the entrenched corruption of American political life and what our options for reclamation may be. Mark, always our honor to welcome you, sir. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, James. I'm always sort of humbled with the very fine words that you introduced me, but it's a pleasure being on with you, and I'm glad to be here this evening.
Well, thank you very much for saying that. I know when you and I normally make the rounds in the media, we don't get such appropriately accurate introductions that we used to be calling everything but what we are. My co-host who'll be joining us for this conversation is Eddie Miller, and he wants to say a quick hello to you before we get started.
Well, hello there, Mr. Weber, Mark. My name is Eddie Miller, like James said. I've been. Didn't you used to write with the Noontide Press?
Right. Well,
That's
an associated publishing venture, and we have a website and so forth, and we're responsible for that as well. And we have a great number of books and discs and so forth available through the Noontide Press website, as well as through Institute for Historical Review.
And let's give that website very quickly, Mark, for the Institute for Historical Review, and we'll be sure to revisit that at the end of the hour as well.
Right. That's IHR.org. A tremendous amount of information. We update the website several times a week, and there's a lot of both current affairs, but we try to highlight news behind the news, that is, important trends, important news that has real consequences for the future, for the long-range interests of our country and our world.
Very few do it as well. Eddie?
Mr. Weber, you know, is there a Bradley, I can't remember Bradley's first name, a Bradley that you're aware with used to publish with the Noontide Press? I used to read his works a lot. He was really good. He didn't have a college degree, but he was really sharp. Are you
right,
familiar
that's Bradley
with his
Smith.
Writing?
He runs another organization called Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust. Of course, they have a website, too, and you can check that out as well. And we have worked together over the past, but not so much recently, but yes, I mean, he spoke at several of our meetings, and he does his own thing, of course, and so do we. There's a slightly different emphasis and focus of his work as opposed to ours.
Well, Mr. Weber, I'd like to thank you for your work. I think you're a very brave man. I'm a lot older than James. Kind of hate to admit it, but I've probably been knowing you probably longer than James, because he's just a young whippersnapper compared to old Papaw here. But you've done excellent work. You've swum against the tide. You've never retreated or surrendered, as far as I know. And so is this Bradley. Yeah, you're right. But I'd just like to say that I'm going to shut up now, but I'd like to congratulate you and thank you for your wonderful work that you've done over the years.
Well, thank you, Ed. I appreciate that. You know, I mean, we live in an age of very, very perverted values. And in a healthy society,
we wouldn't be on, and James and you and so forth wouldn't be on the margins as we are, but we live in a society that rewards those who deceive and lie to the public, and it punishes those who tell the truth. It's a real topsy-turvy society of values, one that our grandparents and great-grandparents would hardly recognize. You know, Joe Sobran once said, America is so screwed up that if a country like the United States of America today had existed 50 years ago, we'd be declaring war against it. It's that screwed up.
Well, I think we have.
It's just astonishing. I mean, in the mass media, the behavior of our politicians, the corruption and so forth. But what I wanted to really focus on is just how the corruption of our system that has led to an all-time unprecedented breakdown of trust by the public in our major institutions, not just in the presidency of Barack Obama, but the presidency altogether, presidency of George Bush, the Congress, all-time lows, low levels of confidence and trust of the media, of the police, and so forth. And we see this just across the board. Americans are very, very unhappy with the direction we're going in, with our political leaders, and I think that's important to focus, that it's not going to be turned around because we elect this guy or that guy or one person's going to change the thing. The level of corruption and the level of, distrust, is really very deeply rooted in our society.
Well, and this is why I wanted to have Eddie on tonight, Mark, with you, because of the topic at hand. And we're talking about the entrenched corruption of American political life and how it seems as though everyone who gets elected, whether a Republican or a Democrat, seems to be subverted or perverted in some shape, form, or fashion. And Ed, this is right up Eddie's wheelhouse. I believe it was about a month or two ago, we had former New York Police Department Detective Jim Rothstein on, who had actually done some research into this. And it's pretty simple to diagnose, is that when you get elected, you're either bought and paid for by certain lobbying groups, or they find your vice of choice and compromise you that way. Either way, it doesn't take long for most people to sell out to whatever their poison may be. And then they are completely puppets at the whim of the master.
True. And Mr. Right. Weber, I'd like to ask you a question. I think, now this is my opinion, I want to see if you agree with it. I think that the reason probably that the trust in the politicians are so low now is because, thanks to the internet and alternative media, like the cesspool, like your writings, the people in America and the world were educated now. We don't have to depend on the control media anymore, and we see the corruption. You know, we're not victims held hostage to the spin doctors. Would that be true?
Well, I'm glad you raised that. This is the point I wanted to get into. You know, it's hard to know with precision whether the mass media reflects the reality or whether it contributes to the reality. And I want to make this point about, if bear with me for just a moment, about how Hollywood presents our politicians.
You take all the time you need.
Older people may remember the 1939 movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. It stars Jimmy Stewart. It's got a range of well-known actors. And in this movie, politicians, there are corrupt people in politics. They're bad guys. But the movie ends with this triumphant victory for good. Jimmy Stewart is this honest politician, and this corrupt politician played by Claude Rains is so ashamed at the corruption that he's been involved in trying to silence Jimmy Stewart, this good guy, that he breaks down on the floor of the Senate and admits just how corrupt he is. That was in 1939. Now, going to the present, many people listening might be familiar with a very, very popular series on Netflix called House of Cards. It just finished its third season. It's enormously popular. It stars Kevin Spacey as this fellow who is a U.S. congressman who later becomes president of the United States. The astonishing contrast between politics as presented in 1939 and by the media in general in the 1930s and 40s and today is astonishing, because in House of Cards, all the politicians are corrupt. I mean, Kevin Spacey is just out, and all the people are just out for themselves. They don't care at all whether anything is really going to be good. They might be in favor of policies that are good because they're going to help them get ahead, but that's not their main consideration. In throughout the series, and this is reflected in motion pictures that portray big business, politicians, and so forth, everybody's just out for himself. Everybody's corrupt. They're out for personal glory, for getting ahead, for money. That's all that matters. Now, the question you were sort of raising earlier is, well, is American politics much more corrupt and we just know more about it because of the Internet and so forth, or has something really changed? Well, I'd say it's a bit of both, or it's hard to know exactly what the mix is, because I think there is no question of just how that something has changed in American ethics and American values. We tolerate now behavior by politicians that the American public just would not have tolerated 40, 50 years ago. I mean, a few examples. When I was young, it was considered unthinkable that a politician who had been divorced could ever be elected president. The first man to run for president who had been divorced, who was prominent, was probably Nelson Rockefeller. And everybody said, well, he'll never get elected because he had been divorced. I mean, those kind of considerations have just gone completely out the window.
We're going to take a break, Mark. We're going to continue this excellent conversation with Mark Weber right after this.
Cesspool, right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution. The Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Stay in the tank longer to what we got.
welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Back with the incomparable Mark Weber, IHR.org. Be sure to support the good work of the Institute for Historical Review. And before that last break, of course, we were talking with Mark about rampant corruption in American political life, and he referenced the Netflix series House of Cards. I have seen each of those three seasons, and Mark, I believe that that is probably a fairly accurate portrayal about how politics works in Washington. Eddie had one quick comment to make, and then we're going to toss it back to you. Go, Eddie.
Mark, I'm going to throw something by you. It's my firm belief that we have a very corrupt political system in America because the American people are corrupt and stupid and lazy and care not one whit of what's going on. I'm running out. I'm running out by Mr.
I think the public is about the same as ever, but the public is completely confused. I mean, there's no models of how not to act in a sense in a corrupt way. Corruption, in a sense, is just being concerned about what's good for me. Everyone asks in a corrupt society, how can I get ahead? How's it going to benefit me? But we have a society that has a fundamental value system that emphasizes this question, what's good for me? A non-corrupt society has to be one with a cohesion based on ethnicity, culture, race, religion, something that a glue that holds a thing together and which makes people and gives an alternative to saying just what's in it for me. In other words, a corrupt society is inevitable in a society where what's good for me is the prevailing ethos, and that unfortunately is true in America. And that, and the American public is in a sense dumbed down, self-centered, because that's the prevailing ideology of our society. The question is always asked, well, what are the rights for me? What's good for me is the main consideration. And in any society where that's the ruling ideology, I think corruption, as we see across the board, is all but inevitable.
Mark, I'm 68 years old, and I've labeled the people you're talking about as the me generation. Mark, when did the me generation come upon the scene?
Well,
what decade?
This goes to the real core of what our problem is and what went wrong. You know, I've had so many discussions over the years with people who try to identify, well, where did things go wrong? In one sense, they went wrong from the very beginning because Americans took for granted the most important fact about our existence as a country. The central fact of American history is that it was settled by people from Europe. This is crucial. Not the Declaration of Independence, not the Constitution. Those are fine things. Those are good things. But the more importantly is the content, the character of the people who settled here. But people came to this country not to benefit America. They came here to benefit themselves. And there's a basic idea that's always been in place that Americans have, that if we can just work out things so that people can get ahead as individuals, it'll all sort of work out for the country as a whole. And unfortunately, that's not true. There has to be something more than that, and there has to be guideline, some value system that emphasizes that above and beyond just what's good for the individual.
Well, Mark, you know, certainly the founding stock of this country were bound by their race and by their faith, most of them being Christians. You know, we have seen that deteriorate on both fronts to the point now where we're just a hodgepodge Tower of Babel, and the results have been predictable. But the only tougher question is the only question I can think of that is tougher than how did it start is what do we do about it? So you've mentioned that efforts to make the system work, this was in your email to me earlier this week, are in your opinion doomed, which inevitably promotes cynicism and corruption. But so we've got these elected officials who go up there and they get their treat of choice dangled in front of them, whether it be women or boys, if you're Barney Frank and Lindsey Graham. And, you know, whatever their vice is dangled, they're bought off. You cannot possibly, you get Mr. Smith, he's an activist, he's going out there, he's burning the candle at both ends, he's going to, you know, reclaim America's destiny, he's going to go out there and just really make a positive impact, and he runs up against this buzzsaw. There is not all the vigor and enthusiasm in the world that is going to sway a politician more than the hundreds of thousands of dollars that come streaming into their PAC. So, and then, of course, we see the ultimate betrayal by these so-called conservative Republicans that go up there and vote for amnesty, for God's sake. So the question is there any use at all in this two-party system? We don't have a parliamentary system like they have in Europe. Is there any use at all even working politically, in your opinion, Mark? Or should there be other methods, or is this still the way we should go?
I think that the political life of a country is always going to be constrained. It's always going to be limited by the cultural values of a society. In other words, the values and the parameters of discussion are set by the mass media, by the educational system, and political discourse, political discussion outside of that permissible framework is just not possible. We live in a society where to say the truth in political life is suicide, because the public's been so conditioned by the mass media, by the educational system, by our churches and so forth, to say that anyone who says the kind of truthful things that Americans understood and took for granted 50 or 100 years ago, those people are doomed right from the beginning. I mean, a person who just says basic truthful things about race reality, he will be immediately called a lot of names. And the general public doesn't say, well, what he said might be accurate or something. They just know, well, he's called a bad guy, and they stay away from him, because that's just it's a natural way that people react when somebody is vilified. And our media vilifies anyone who says even the most basic truth, who affirms even just the most minimal reality about our foreign affairs, social life, and so forth. We're told just fantastic lies by our police. Look, I'll give one example. Some years ago under George Bush, they passed the No Child Left Behind Act. It was passed overwhelmingly by the Congress. It was introduced by a Republican president, so-called conservative president. The No Child Left Behind Act is based on absolutely false ideas about people. It's based on the false idea that how well children do in school is entirely the consequence of socialization and upbringing. That's not true. It's going to be largely determined by who they are, by their heredity, by their genetics. That's a basic reality. But we have laws in place. We have a whole lot of laws in place and institutions and so forth that deny this basic genetic biological reality. And any society that tries to make things work on the basis of a false notion of reality is bound to fail. And in a sense, everybody who voted for the No Child Left Behind Act, and I can give other examples, they know it's nonsense. They know that it's untrue, but they don't care. That's the media tells us from the time that children in America are in kindergarten, they're told the most model exemplary American of the 20th century was Martin Luther King. They're told that from right. The time they're in kindergarten. Well, what Martin Luther King's worldview was basically not true. But our politicians, our media, and so forth are all trying to make society conform to the ideology, not make the ideology conform to reality. And a society like that is doomed.
Oh, Mark, I hope I didn't interrupt. I was going to say...
And I agree 100%. Great commentary.
Amen, amen. I would like to say that No Child Left Behind could be better described as No Child Left Unmedicated, you know, with all the psychotropic drugs they're putting them on in the school now. Mark, let me ask you, when is the critical mass point going to be reached in this country? And you made an excellent point that we cannot have a government of the people like we have without a European stock. With the massive out-of-control immigration, have we reached the critical mass where there's no going back?
You know, we live in a society something like the old Soviet Union in the last 30 or 40 years of its existence. Nobody in the old Soviet Union in 1970 really believed that just with a few more years of effort, they were going to have a glorious communist society that was going to be more prosperous and more happy than any society around in the world. That's what communism laid out as the future. People just stopped believing it. They just went through the motions. They would say they believe things. They go along with the slogans. But people stopped believing it. Now, the thing just eventually fell apart. And I think eventually this will break down, too. The problem for America is, unlike the Soviet Union, is when the Soviet Union broke down, Russians could go back to being Russian. Estonians could be Estonian. Georgians could be Georgians. Armenians could be Armenians. Americans don't have the same sense to fall back on something. We don't have a long heritage that's a part, that's different from, that's more solidly rooted than the kind of ideology that we have had in place for 200 years.
Incredible. Brilliant point. What a
brilliant
guest.
Point,
Mark Weber. We should have him on every week if we could. Mark, we only have seconds remaining, but I want to ask you this, and we ask this a lot. The people listening out there, the good people that listen to this show and support your work, what can they do to be part of the solution? 15 seconds.
Spread the word, because right now, very little can be done in the political system. Education, awareness, truth is, I think, the most important task that we
have.
Stoke
the embers, keep the embers lit, be eternally vigilant, and when it collapses, as the USSR did, it'll be our time to make something better of the ruins. Radio That's Network. What we're keeping everything going for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Mark Weber. We'll be back.
Thank you. Thank you, James, for having me.